Burns and Gambo talk Phoenix Suns basketball on this Suns Day. Brought to you by Four Peaks Brewing Company on the home of Phoenix Suns basketball. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Suns Day with Burns and Gambo.
A combination of things, you know, human nature, you know, as you get comfortable, sometimes you take a step back. But then you also look at your opponent, you know, they take a step forward, and it's a kind of dynamic relationship. You can't look at it one way or the other. You have to take it all into account, knowing that there's things you can do. We can do better to play better. And then there's some instances where the opponent is just going to be better than us. And it's not whether or not they're better, it's how we respond to it. And so I think last night's loss, if I know this group, you know, those guys will be back ready tomorrow against Portland to try to right some of those wrongs.
James Jones on with us yesterday, the general manager of the Phoenix Suns. 5 o'clock hour, Burns and Gambo show. Welcome back in. Thanks for hanging out with us. Jones joined us yesterday, as he does every single Wednesday, and that was in the aftermath of the loss to the Warriors, which was in the aftermath of the loss to the Lakers. And it's like anybody.
Has it been bad news for these opponents lately?
No, it hasn't been. Yeah. No, it's been a while since it's been bad news for anybody when it comes to the Phoenix Suns, and that's because they're playing with a very obvious lack of intensity. There has just been, I don't know if they're tired, I don't know if they're bored, I don't know if they need the bright lights of the playoffs to kind of stoke their fires a little bit.
If it doesn't stoke their fires, then something's really wrong. Like, if you don't get up for the playoff game, like, they will. I mean, I can't, you know, 99.999, they're going to get up for those games. I mean, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun. I mean, you're going to want to make your mark. You got a chance to win a championship. Yep. I mean, there was a story today that I was looking at. We didn't touch on it today, but it said, like the ceiling for the Suns is the finals.
Mm-hmm.
They said the ceiling for the Phoenix Suns is, I'm going to try to find it here, but it said the ceiling for the Suns is the NBA Finals. The Bleacher Report, realistic best case scenario for each playoff team. For the Phoenix Suns, it says finals loss. And
yeah.
They went on paper, it's not difficult to imagine a deep playoff run, but that Western Conference gauntlet for players who've never dealt with this will be a lot to handle.
Yeah, look, we'll talk about that in a minute. Let's talk about a couple specific players here, and one in particular that's going to have a lot of attention on them tonight one way or another, and that's DeAndre Ayton.
Okay.
He's questionable for tonight's game. He's got soreness in his left knee. I imagine we'll get an update probably fairly quickly here as to whether he's going to play or not, because I think Monty does his pregame media availability sometime in the 5 o'clock hour. I don't know if he's going to play. I don't know if he's not going to play. I don't know if the knee is truly sore, if he's just looking at sort of a mental day off. DeAndre Ayton is, when we start talking about guys not playing with the same intensity they were playing with, DeAndre Ayton, to me, is probably exhibit A in what's gone wrong these last couple of weeks. He has been very, very inconsistent with his effort, and it sounds like the Suns have kind of noticed the same thing.
Yeah, what they're noticing more than anything is that he's not getting to his spots quick enough. You know, that's the thing. He's back to jogging out of screens and looking to see, you know, what's there instead of just getting there. Get to your spot. You've got a spot. They want you to get to a spot. He's not getting there quick enough. So the challenge is that if he doesn't set fast enough, he can't clear the lane. So he's not clearing the lane. So that's affecting everybody else, and he's not getting himself in a good position. When they do post him up, you know, he's not ready if the basketball were to find him. So, you know, he's not in a good spot if the basketball does go to him. So he's got to do a better job of fighting to get to the spot quick. I mean, if he can establish position, it's a lot easier on him. It's a lot easier on the guys that want to drive the lane. He hasn't been establishing that position. And a lot of it, I mean, you know, if you watch, you could see him, you know, off the screen. So you gotta go off the screen. You got to set that screen and go. He's kind of jogging and kind of looking around and trying to see what's going on. He knows where he has to get to. He just needs to get there.
The question is why?
I don't know. I think it could be, it could be tired. I mean, it's been a long season. It could be part of it's tired. It could be, you know, mental. It could be just, you know, he's hit a little bit of a wall. I mean, there's a number of, you know, reasons for it. I don't know the reason. I just know that there's a feeling that it is very fixable
yeah,
for him, and it's going to get fixed.
Getting to the why is kind of the bottom line here. Why is DeAndre Ayton not getting to his spots? Why is DeAndre Ayton jogging off of screens? Why is DeAndre Ayton things that he was doing so well, why is he not doing them anymore? And those are questions that they desperately, and maybe not, but maybe that has something to do with tonight. Maybe that's the reason why he's questionable on the injury list. Maybe they feel like a night off would do him good. Maybe they feel like a night away would do him good. Maybe he's legitimately sore. And maybe he plays 32 minutes tonight and he plays through it and he's fine. But either way, whatever the why is to the DeAndre Ayton conversation, they have to get to the bottom of that, and they have to get to the bottom of it quickly. Because if he's lost intensity, because these games have lost intensity, he needs to rediscover it quickly. If he's tired, then maybe they need to give him a rest, and maybe that's what today is about if he ends up not playing. The why, when it comes to DeAndre Ayton, is just as essential as the what when it comes to figuring out what's wrong with him, because he is essential personnel in the first round of the playoff series. They're not going to get very far with this version of him.
No question. I mean, it's against anybody, right? Big teams, small teams. I mean, smaller teams, you want to make sure that he pounds. Bigger teams, you want to make sure that he
neutralizes
rebounding
somewhat,
and neutralizes and defends. And so it's against anybody. If it's Portland, if it's the Lakers, if it's the Clippers, if it's the Nuggets, if it's the Jazz, you can make an argument that he is necessary in all of the matchups. Golden State. You know, look what happened when he didn't play well against Golden State. Draymond Green had a triple-double, and Looney had a good game. Like, he's got to play well in any of those series for them to have a chance to win.
And then there's,
I think,
the mysterious disappearing act of Dario Saric over the last month and a half. And to me, if you want to talk about why things have gone south a little bit for the Suns, why they don't look like quite the same team, I think a lot of it has to do with their bench. And I think a lot of that has to do with Cam Johnson and kind of his three-point shot that has deserted him. And I know he's missed a few games. But Dario Saric, he at one point was in the conversation for Sixth Man of the Year. He was never going to win it, but he was in conversation for it. Now it's almost laughable to say that Dario Saric would be the Sixth Man of the Year. It's just not an option anymore. That, to me, is a huge problem for the Suns.
Number one thing that's very noticeable with Dario, and they're trying to get this fixed, but very passive, very hesitant. There's a lot of pressure in these games now. He's become very hesitant. Without the pressure, that wasn't happening. But they have expectations and standards, and he hasn't been meeting them. So they suffer when he doesn't play well. His aggressiveness is just not there. He's not playing with any force. Passes aren't good. He's turning the ball over. So the number one and number two things are just he's very passive. He's very hesitant. And they got to try to get him out of that. Now, no jobs or roles are solidified outside of the top, three or four guys. So, I mean, there's a chance he could get his job back, but Frank took it from him in practice and with reps, and Frank's been more consistent. Frank's been more assertive, and, for Dario to get back to playing more minutes, he's going to have to show him something.
But when I think you would agree, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, when they're at their best, Dario is a much better option than Frank Kaminsky.
Yes, yes.
When they're hitting their ceilings, you'd much rather have Dario than Frank Kaminsky out there. I just don't think there's going to be enough time for Dario to get it back. There's three regular season games. There's a week's worth of practice to expect this, especially when he's only getting, 8 minutes a night? 5 minutes?
Even play the other night.
Yeah, the other night he didn't even play.
So
the chances that will come with being on the floor, practice is practice, but games are something else. And if he's not getting those shots in the game, I don't know how he even presents himself to earn the opportunity to get back in the good graces of Monty Williams when you've got three regular season games left before the playoffs. I don't think there's any time.
No, there might not be. There's always two or three guys that fall in and out of lineups in the playoffs, the bench guys. So, sometimes it comes down to matchups and changes and things like that. If Frank's not going well, they may give him an opportunity. But again, I think the number one thing is for him, it's just he's got to stop being so hesitant. He's very hesitant now. So, you just wonder if the pressure's starting to get to some of these guys. Dario's a guy that's played in some playoff games, but you do wonder if the season's been long or the pressure's getting to him, but he has just not been aggressive out there, and that's why he has lost his minutes to Frank Kaminsky.
It is Suns Day. Phoenix Suns looking to take on the Portland Trail Blazers, looking to scorch the Portland Trail Blazers in a Western Conference showdown. Tip-off tonight is at 7 o'clock here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. Suns Day is brought to you by Four Peaks Brewing Company. Well, as we just highlighted, the Phoenix Suns are playing far from their best basketball, but Gambo mentioned it a second ago. Best case scenario, the finals? Is that still on the table? We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Arizona Sports, breaking news.
And there it is from our own Kellen Olsen on the pregame media Zoom with Suns head coach Monty Williams. DeAndre Ayton is out for tonight's game against the Portland Trail Blazers. Will not play.
Well, get him right. I mean, if he's not right, then get him right. I mean, the thought of beating Portland and having Portland lose two games just becomes, not that you still can't beat Portland. You can still beat Portland without him.
Sure.
It just becomes a lot more difficult. And the most important thing is, you know, you're trying to get DeAndre right, and, you know, that's not going to happen if he's not playing.
Nope. And what we'll probably never know, and I imagine somebody might even ask Monty today, maybe even Kellen will ask Monty today, but what we'll probably never really know the answer to is tonight's night off for DeAndre Ayton a physical one or a mental one? You know, is it a physical break because his body is tired and because his knee is sore and they want to make sure they get him right for the postseason? Or is this rest? Is this, hey, big fella, take a night off. You've been grinding all season long. It's starting to show. You've been a little crispy the last couple of weeks. You're everything that you just said in the last segment, your rolls off the pick and roll, your rim runs, getting to your spot, jogging instead of running, looking around instead of getting where you're supposed to be. We've noticed an element of laziness settling into your game, and we think you just kind of need a night away from it to sort of recharge your batteries. Is it physical? Is it mental? Is it a knee? Is it his brain? I don't know. Whatever it is, DeAndre Ayton's not playing tonight. And I would think, in some ways, that's also sort of a concession by the Suns. Like you said, not that it's impossible for them to beat Portland without DeAndre Ayton. It certainly is possible for them to do it. But with Nurkic and Kanter, it does seem like if you want to give yourself the best chance, you play DeAndre Ayton tonight. It's almost like an acknowledgement of, all right, the Lakers are going to get the 7 seed. We're going to get the 2 seed. Let the chips fall where they may. It's going to be what it's going to be, and just let it happen rather than try to manipulate it from happening. You know what I mean?
Listen, we've always talked about the rest angle of it. Do you give some guys a break? You know, do you try to, you know, give them the mental break, give them the physical break? I mean, I've always been for that. I've always thought that, you know, if they were doing that and losing these games, you wouldn't mind so much, right? Hey, they lost to Atlanta, and they had to go to overtime in Cleveland, and they lost to Golden State. Okay, but they're resting guys. Okay, then you don't mind.
Yeah.
You don't mind that they're losing, but they weren't resting guys. And if they had been, and they lose those games, you're not really, we're talking about it on a completely different thing, but they were trying to win those games, and they weren't playing well. So we'll see. I got some messages in right now. I'll try to find out what I can on DA.
Yeah, but we know he's out tonight, not going to play, and that kind of changes things dramatically for the Suns and how they defend a Portland Trailblazers team that, you know, we talked with the beat writer, Jason, who covers the Portland Trailblazers for the Athletic website, Jason Quick from the Athletic, and he said that the turnaround has been stunning with Portland. Like, basically for the last month or so of the season, they've been playing above average defense in the NBA, which they don't do in Portland. Never really been a part of their DNA in Portland the last couple of years.
They held Utah under 100 points. It's only the fifth time this year they've held an opponent under 100. I mean, their defense has been so bad. They had only four games holding an opponent under 100. So, you know, that was good for them to go out there and play good defense. They are obviously getting these guys back, right? Getting Nurkic back and getting CJ McCollum back. And we always knew that they were a good, capable team. They are 1-9 against the top four teams in the West. 1-9. The Jazz win is their only win. So they've really struggled against the better teams.
No, but since March 26th, Portland is number one in offensive rating, number 16 in defensive rating. They're just, it's night and day how they're playing. But you're right, the top 10, the top four teams in the West, they have struggled with dramatically, and they've also really shortened their rotation. Keep an eye out for that tonight, too. Much like the Warriors a couple of nights ago, who only played eight guys against the Suns, the Trailblazers are only going to play eight guys tonight. That's basically their deal. I want to go back, though, to something that we started to talk a little bit about in the last segment that I think we need to talk about a little bit more. Best case scenario, realistic best case scenario for each playoff team. And the Phoenix Suns, they did it by tier, you know, like they put teams in one tier and one team, you know, teams in another tier. The Phoenix Suns ended up in the need some luck tier 3. The best case scenario, in their opinion, this is from Bleacher Report, the best case scenario was that the Phoenix Suns get to the finals and lose the NBA finals. Would you agree that's the best case scenario for the Phoenix Suns? So what they're basically saying is not possible for them to win the NBA championship.
No, I think the best case scenario is you win the damn NBA championship.
That's why I'm asking.
I think the best case scenario is if you get there, and you've gone through that gauntlet of the tough Western Conference, and you got to play, you know, Milwaukee or Philly or maybe the Nets. Harden came back last night, told everybody how good he is at basketball. I'm not trying to brag, but I'm really, really good at this game.
I'm really good at this. Yeah, okay, James.
I'm really good at this game.
ASU taught him that humility, clearly.
Yeah. Wish you would have done that in the NCAA tournament instead of going out in the first round. But, I think that the ceiling should be to win a championship. I mean, we had Kevin Pelton on, and I said, hey, you know, can this team win it? I asked him a bunch of teams, and I said, can the Suns win a championship? Yeah.
He named eight.
Yeah, he named eight. A lot of people look at, the ceiling should be that they should win a championship.
Yeah, Mike Breen, the voice of the NBA on ESPN, he named eight, and the Suns were one of the eight. And I don't know this Bleacher Report article, I'm clicking on the link to it right now, if it were dated, May 13th, so it came out today, I bet if they wrote that article 10 days ago, they would have a better best-case scenario for the Phoenix Suns than finals loss. They would say finals win. I think the Suns, and the way they've played since that Utah win a couple of weeks ago, I think the Suns have damaged the national perception of their ability to win it all with how they've played these last few weeks, with how they played.
But do you expect them to play that way when the playoffs start?
No, I don't. In fact,
I don't know if they will or not, but I would expect that there's going to be a different gear that they go into for those games.
I believe that, too. And I think the number one thing that's going on with the Phoenix Suns right now, I mean, it's not fatigue. It's not, you know, mental burnout, physical burnout. It's that they know when the playoffs start that they're going to play at a different intensity, and that these last 2 weeks worth of games, they just haven't had any need in their mind to play with that kind of desperation and intensity. I think it's the number. It's really why I'm actually not that worried about the Suns come playoff time, because I think come playoff time, as long as they can find that gear again, and I guess that's the biggest question, I think they will understand exactly what's on the line in these games, and they will rediscover that heat. They'll rediscover that kind of intensity that they need. I think that's the number one thing that's been wrong with this team. These last two weeks worth of games, they haven't played anybody that has required a lot of passion or attention,
but even
or
in the
fire or intensity.
Even in the Golden State game, you had a really great game by Book, and Chris Paul played really well. I mean, that outside of Jay Crowder, I mean, you didn't get anything from anybody else. So there's just so many different angles. I mean, look, they need to win playoff games. Booker and Paul have to be really good. But them alone is not going to do it. I mean, you need other guys to step up and carry the load at times. And you know, that was the problem with the Golden State game, is that there was so many guys that had off games.
All right. I got one other note from the Suns. This is from Kellen Olson. This is on his Twitter account, at Kellen Olson. One word on Twitter. He's a good follow if you're a Suns fan. Quote, didn't see what happened, but looked up from Monty's Zoom, and Cam Payne was down in warmups. He stayed down for a bit before getting up and limping it off. He just went back to the locker room. Payne walked and hopped it off on his own with that limp. So apparently in the background, behind Monty,
ruh-roh,
while he was doing his pregame media availability, something happened with Cam Payne, and he went down on the floor. And he stayed down for a while, got up, limped it off, and went back to the locker room.
Wow.
That just happened.
Okay.
Just within the last moment or two, we saw that tweet. So I have no idea about his availability tonight now. I just know that literally just happened a second ago in Suns warm-up. Shoot around.
Okay.
Pre-game.
I'll see if I could find out something on that before the show ends right
okay.
now.
Okay. So that's what's going on with the Suns as they get ready to take on the Portland Trailblazers tonight. Coming up, it's still considered to be the biggest hole on the Arizona Cardinals roster. What are the chances the rookie cornerbacks they drafted can plug that gap? That's coming up, Burns and Gambo Show. John Gambadero, Dave Burns, Thursday afternoon here at 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. We're lucky enough to have two members of the Cardinals rookie class joining us on our show today. Rondale Moore joined us. Marco Wilson joined us today. And it's the cornerback position in particular we kind of want to focus on a little bit, given that we had Marco Wilson on today, who told us, the fourth-round pick out of Florida, He thinks he can make an immediate impact right away.
Yeah, I believe I could come in and make a quick impact. I mean, I'm used to being in situations like this. I was in the same situation as a freshman in college. I had to come in and grow up pretty fast and be thrown into the fire early on as a freshman. I feel like I have a similar situation here, and I just got to make sure I handle it the right way and be able to try to help my team as quick as possible.
Well, that's good, because according to this ESPN.com insider story that you sent me today, the biggest hole right now for the Cardinals on the roster continues to be, and this doesn't surprise me at all, their cornerback spot.
Yeah, I think, you know, they didn't get any of the top three or four corners or five corners, right? They didn't get Asante Samuel in the second round. They didn't get Caleb Farley. They didn't get they didn't get J.C. Horn, Patrick Surtain. So when they didn't get those guys, you know, the guys they get, even though there's talent there and there's skill there, I mean, it's, you know, there's question marks. There's more question marks. I mean, Markell Wilson had two torn ACL injuries in his life. But still, somehow, ran a 4.35 40-yard dash. You know, after the second, the second ACL injury was as a sophomore, and he bounced back, and he was so good as a freshman. He played really well as a freshman. He was the coach's all-SEC freshman team, did a really good job. But then, you know, after that, like, the numbers weren't as good. His completion percentage against him was only 42.5% when he was a freshman. But his last 2 years, they were 69.2%. So the success wasn't there. What he blew everybody away with was his pro day. He was really, really good, just freak athlete, had an unbelievable pro day, and that's where he kind of won a bunch of people over.
Yeah, to expect a fourth-rounder in Markell Wilson, a sixth-rounder in Tae Gowan to come in right away and be the guy for them, even to be the number two guy, I think is just a really big ask for either one of those guys. Now, we didn't ask Markell Wilson this. I didn't really think of it, and I don't even know how I would have phrased the question if I wanted to ask him this. Does it seem to you, like, since the draft, that Tae Gowan, even though he was picked two rounds later, has gotten a lot more attention and a lot more buzz?
He's talked a lot more. I think didn't he have a tweet out there about, you know, like, paying, you know, making everybody pay for
looking at? Yeah,
that stuff gets attention when you're like, I'm going to make everybody pay that didn't draft me and stuff like that. I'm almost positive.
No, he did. Yeah, he did. You're right.
So I think that's what it is. I think that's, you know, Markell Wilson played at Florida. You know, he played for the Gators. He's, you know, more famous for, and you asked him about it, throwing the shoe in the LSU game that cost him the football game. You know, he picked up the kid's shoe and he chucked it. But Markell Wilson was drafted higher. The Cardinals traded up 24 spots to get Markell Wilson. He went up against the best in the SEC. So, but I think you're right on, you know, that Marco's not getting as much play. I think Gowan just, I think he's just been a little bit more vocal about.
Here
I should have. You got the quote.
I got it right here. All I'm right. Not done. Somebody has to pay for sleeping on me.
Okay, that's like those get noticed. They get noticed.
Yeah.
Hayes, here what he. Somebody's going to have to pay for sleeping on me. Like, okay, you got my attention.
Well, and there was another story about him, too. And I'm looking. Yeah, here it is right here. Okay, maybe this is another reason why he's getting attention. And I know, okay, it's superficial and it's silly and ridiculous. I'm going to preface this by saying that right up front. Okay, this is ridiculous. Okay,
I have no idea where you're going here. Okay.
The number that he's been given is a number that over the course of recent history for the Arizona Cardinals is a number that typically belongs to really good players in the secondary. He's going to be number 32 for the Cardinals. That was Buddha's number before he switched.
Cromartie?
That was Tyrann Mathieu's number before he left. And so he was quoted, quote, actually 32 chose me. I'm thankful for the number. I'm going to live up to the legacy. I know a lot of good players have put that number on, so it's my turn. I think Arizona did that on purpose, so now I got to live up to it, close quote. Those are comments he made on the Bickley and Murata show about a week ago. So the number that he's kind of adding that to his, all right, all of you who slept on me, I'm going to make you pay. All of you who thought, you know, maybe a sixth round pick, I'm going to show you better. The Arizona Cardinals gave me this number that belonged to Buddha, that belonged to Tyrann Mathieu. I've got to live up to it. I'm going to do that. It feels to me like, and maybe I'm making more out of this than there is, it feels like Tae Gowan has got way more attention since the draft than Marco Wilson has. Way, way more attention at that spot.
And I think he's just getting it because of stuff like that. I'll live up to the legacy of wearing number 32. I mean, Pro Football Talk picked that up. You know, so there's just, you know, there's a lot of people that kind of picked that up.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously he was a sixth round pick. You know, Marco Wilson was a fourth round pick. You know, you'd think the fourth round pick should be better than the sixth round pick.
You would think
Marco Wilson more than they liked Gowan.
You would think the fourth round pick should get more attention than the sixth round pick. But, yeah, maybe the sixth round pick is bringing it on himself. And maybe it's just my own personal preference. I like the Tate Gowan pick better than the Marco Wilson pick. I'll speed that. I cop to it in the days after the draft. Marco Wilson, the tape wasn't very good on him his last 2 years at Florida. Like you mentioned a second ago, the completion percentage against
69.2.
Yeah, it was great when he was a freshman, but his last 2 years there, it wasn't so good. Plus, the injuries are a concern. The two torn ACLs are a concern. Maybe it's just me projecting my feelings onto this. I'm more excited about Gowan than I am about Marco Wilson, but I don't think either one of them can be counted on to fill this need at cornerback for the Cardinals in year one.
I think the other thing, yeah, I agree with that. I do agree with that. The other thing was his story of opting out. His daughter was born prematurely, and he didn't want to, you know, other family members. He just didn't want to, he saw that, he contracted COVID and he saw it spread to these people. He just didn't, he wanted to protect everybody. So he didn't play. So I think that story and then the number story and then the people are going to have to pay story. And I just think that in some ways, I just think he's been in the news a lot more than Marco Wilson has.
That's fair. That's fair. I will say this. I think I'll say this. I am very concerned about the Cardinals cornerbacks moving forward this season. I like Malcolm Butler. I think he's a good add. Byron Murphy's good in the slot. I don't know if Robert Alford can be counted on. I don't know if he should be counted on. And I don't think a fourth rounder or a sixth rounder, I don't think the Cardinals have done enough to address this position in this offseason, and I hope they don't get burned for it. I don't think there's enough there right now. Not enough that you can believe in or count on going into a long season. I'm very concerned about that position for the
But is there a little optimism with these two guys that they might have found something?
Long term.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some optimism. They drafted two.
Yeah, two, but not,
not where you wanted
fourth round, a sixth round, right? I mean, you kind of, it's kind of catching lightning in a bottle if you get one of those to work out. Those are not premium spots.
How do you feel about the Cardinals tight end position after the guy they drafted in the draft?
The one they didn't draft?
That's what I'm
saying.
Like they didn't draft one. So there's no thought on that position could be better because of what they did in the draft.
Yeah, but
there is with the cornerback because they drafted two guys.
Yeah, it's just fourth round and sixth round. It's just not quite the same. There are far more flyers taken in the fourth and the sixth round than there are in the first or the second.
I'm going by memory here. Didn't Gowan also say he's the Tom Brady of the sixth round?
He did say that. He compared himself to Tom Brady.
Listen, this kid talks. This kid talks.
Yeah.
He likes to talk.
By the way,
makes news.
I got an update from Kellen Olsen.
Yeah.
He is still there at the arena, obviously, covering the Suns game tonight. Cameron Payne is back out there.
Okay.
So he was there on the Zoom call with Monty Williams. He looked away from the court, looked back on the court. Campaign was on the court, on the ground, kind of limped off. He just sent some video of Campaign back out there shooting, so it must be that everything is okay.
All is good.
All is well, except that DeAndre Ayton's not playing tonight. That part's not well. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show here on this Thursday, Zach Gallen is now on the Diamondbacks injured list for the second time this season. How did this injury happen? What does it mean for Arizona's rotation? We'll get into it next on the Burns and Gambo show. Time for the Vizzy's Hard Seltzer. What's on tonight? The only hard seltzer crafted with antioxidant vitamin C. Proud sponsor of your Arizona Diamondbacks. What's on tonight? You got the Trailblazers taking on the Suns. 7 o'clock tip time here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. One of three remaining games for the Phoenix Suns. And then you've got the Marlins taking on the Diamondbacks tonight. 6:40 first pitch. You'll hear that on ESPN 620. Those two games plus a whole host of games in the NBA to keep an eye on tonight, one way or another. All of these have Western Conference implications right now. The Kings are beating the Grizzlies 45-41 in the second quarter. That's good news for the Suns. The Knicks are beating the Spurs at halftime 46-43. That's good news for the Suns. And there was another one. The Clippers are now up by 10 over the Hornets, 87-77. That was a tie game at halftime, about 9 minutes to go in the fourth there. That is not good news for the Suns, but the Suns' magic number to clinch the two seed is two. Any combination of Suns wins and Clippers losses that equal two, and the Suns are the number two seed. So maybe they could have gotten some help tonight from the Hornets. Doesn't look like it's going to happen. LA is up by 10.
We haven't talked about the Clippers catching the Suns for two. You said the Clippers are winning right now.
Yeah, so that doesn't help. The Suns' magic number for clinching two over the Clippers is two.
Yeah.
So any combination of Suns.
Right, but if you wanted the Suns to fall to three.
Oh, if you want the Suns to Clippers.
Yeah, some people may want the Suns to fall to three.
We brought that up a little bit yesterday. Like, you know, maybe you want to fall to number
three. You lose tonight to Portland and Clippers win and all of a sudden.
And the Clippers might not want.
And they have the tie and they have the advantage over you, the tiebreaker advantage over you.
Yeah, the Clippers might not want to get to two because they might not want to play the Lakers either. In the first round, they might be very content to stay there at number three. Yeah, the Suns might want to drop to three, and I don't know if the Clippers are going to want to move up to two.
Somebody's
so got to
win a basketball
on.
Game.
Yeah,
two teams are playing.
Somebody's got to take on the LA Lakers in the first round. So that's what's on tonight, and that includes Diamondbacks baseball. Let's get you ready for the game.
The home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball is 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. We're checking in on the D-backs as they warm up for the game's first pitch. D-backs on deck, brought to you by Sonic. This is how we Sonic. Stop by your nearest location today for the Twisted Texan Cheeseburger and Footlong Coney for a limited time only at Sonic. And by Trajan Wealth. Get your retirement on deck with Trajan Wealth, your local trusted financial fiduciary. TrajanWealth.com.
The finale of the four-game series tonight as the Diamondbacks go for the series win in this four-game series against the Marlins. And the pitching matchup tonight brought to you by the Berg Simpson Law Firm. When the game is on the line and you've been injured, nobody matches up to the Berg Simpson Law Firm. Visit BergSimpson.com. That's BURGSimpson.com. Good lawyers changing lives. The lefty for the Marlins, Trevor Rogers, gets the start tonight. 4-2, 1.89 ERA. It's spectacular numbers so far for him.
Yeah, he's been great. He's off to a real impressive start in those seven starts. He's allowed two earned runs or fewer in six of his seven starts. He allowed one run on four hits in five innings, his last outing against Milwaukee. Very impressive start for Trevor Rogers.
Merrill Kelly gets the start tonight for the Diamondbacks. The righty is 2-3 with a 5.40 ERA. Not as impressive as Rogers, but Merrill Kelly has been on a nice little run in his last three or four starts.
Yeah, he's that bulldog that you look for. You want six good innings out of him. You want three runs or fewer. You want that quality start, and you want him to keep you in the game. He's a master at changing speeds, moving the ball in and around, just, you know, solid, gets ground balls, just a solid pitcher, usually gives you a good chance to compete.
Last night, the Diamondbacks dropped one to the Marlins 3-2. Matt Peacock was forced into action, did a decent job. Troy Lovello was pretty pleased with him in terms of meeting expectations.
He worked so efficiently, and, you know, it was 5-64 pitches, so I think we were going to try and keep him right around that 65-pitch limit, and felt like if we could get through five, it was going to be a solid outing. So we all think very highly of him. So I don't want to say that he exceeded it. He probably met the expectation of what we thought he was capable of doing. And for those young players who come up here and do those types of things, it tells me that they're ready for those challenges. So I thought it was a solid day for him.
Thought he was fantastic. I really do. You know, he had been a relief pitcher. That was his first start. He had been a relief pitcher. He had like seven outings. ERA was over six. Like, oh, that's not very good. But, you know, when you look between the lines at those numbers, he had one really bad outing. He pitched a third of an inning against Colorado, gave up like seven runs. And that's why his ERA was so high. But, you know, he gave up the two-run homer, and then he gave up the solo homer, and then he settled down. He got through, and he got you through the fifth inning. He gave you a chance to win. The Diamondbacks' bats just kind of went cold, and they weren't able to score any runs last night.
Yeah.
So many runs.
So Troy today gave a couple of injury updates on guys. Of course, yesterday the news was Zach Gallen, and we don't have any more details on Zach Gallen other than know that he's not going to pick up a baseball for at least 2 weeks, which means he's going to be out for longer than that because he's going to have to ramp things back up, even best-case scenario with that ulnar collateral ligament sprain that he's got, the one that Nobody seems to think will require surgery, but certainly will require him to not pitch anytime in the near future. So when you look around the injuries, here's Torrey on Ketel Marte.
Ketel took some ABs today and felt good and is continuing his progression. He's going to play four innings of a sim game tomorrow over at Salt River Field. So he's on a very good path.
All right. So not exactly a minor league rehab start yet, but it sounds like he's on his way to that with a sim game he's playing tomorrow.
Yeah, that's good news, right? And I don't expect that, you know, the sim games or rehab assignments are going to be anything more than a couple of days. I think he'll be back. You know, once he starts that, I expect it to just be a couple of days and then he'll be back.
Yeah, Taylor Widener also threw 3 1/3 innings and I believe 51 pitches in a sim game today. He might have one minor league rehab start in his future before he returns. Speaking of starters for the Arizona Diamondbacks, remember after his great start on Tuesday, Mad Bum made these very vague and interesting comments.
Madison, just that your last five starts have just been so dominant. Just can you point to anything that some switch you flipped that just kind of brought all that back and had everything kind of snap into place?
Yeah, I definitely can. But I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus. So I'm gonna keep that to myself. But there is definitely... There was, you know, I mean, it was pretty much that way, as you said.
Torrey was asked about it today. Let me play this.
No, I don't. And any of that type of stuff, I'm not going to necessarily share with you guys. But there's some housekeeping that we always take care of day to day, and you know, there's stuff in there that maybe I'm not aware of, and then eventually cross my plate, but definitely something I'm not going to discuss.
Yeah, it's, you know, listen. I mean, that's just terrible. I mean, he has. You know, to say he's not going to throw somebody in a bus, that's exactly what he did. He's throw somebody under the bus, okay? Everybody in our organization knows who he's throwing under the bus. And now he's pointing fingers at people. I mean, you know, he went into spring last year throwing 88 miles per hour. That's, you know, he wasn't in shape. He was throwing 88 miles per hour. And now he's, you know, walking around like, you know, like he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. I mean, he's got to take responsibility for how poorly he pitched last year and the first couple starts this year.
The MLB standings brought to you by PNC Bank, financial tools and tech to help make things easier. The Giants still on top of the division at 22-14. The D-backs 5.5 games back at 17-20 going into tonight's action. Let's get you some keys to tonight's game.
Listen, man, I'm a huge key master.
I am the key master.
D-backs keys to the game, brought to you by San Chevrolet. Sands makes it easy. Shop how and where you want. Online in the new Sands showroom. Find new roads at sandchevrolet.com.
Got to get Jesse Aguilar out. He went 3-for-4 last night. He leads the Marlins 8 home runs, 29 RBIs, and he's been a thorn in the Diamondbacks' side this series.
That's going to do it for us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Spencer Keatsman is next with a brief edition of the Rundown. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock.
Have a great night, everyone.